How's your bubble?
It's Economic Anxiety with Rod Oram.
This episode, Rod takes us more in depth on where another financial crisis might come from and why we shouldn't be too alarmed in the meantime. We sort of finished up talking on the possibility of another financial crisis, and you were sort of saying not to be super alarmist about it, which I think was a good point. Did you want to go more in depth with that, or kind of talk more about the specifics around it, or would you rather not?
Yes, I will. Gosh, where shall I start with that?
I guess the people are most concerned about, obviously, this happening again, but we've sort of established in the previous chat that we had that it is going to happen, and that's just a fault of the system. And I do want to come back to that probably later, but I guess as much as you can tell us, you know, when can we expect this, what might trigger it, what will be affected, what can we do, I suppose?
Serious financial crises, like any other, are really hard to predict in terms of exactly what will trigger them, what the nature of them will be, when that will happen, and how it will all play out. But having said that, you just don't ignore the whole thing. You look at the system and say, you know, where might this come? And some possibilities are a real problem with the much more substantial debt of developing countries than there was prior to the global financial crisis. And that, of course, particularly focuses on their overseas borrowing, because what we're seeing now is the U.S. economy going very strongly for all sorts of reasons, not the least of which Trump has poured gasoline on already quite a good fire in terms of tax cuts, which I and others, some others would argue, is overstimulating the U.S. economy now. But anyway, so the Federal Reserve is starting to raise U.S. interest rates. And we're now in the extraordinary situation where the Fed funds rate, their benchmark, is now half a percentage point higher than our benchmark, the official cash rate, which is unbelievable. The U.S. interest rate should be lower than ours. And now our government is able to borrow at a lower interest rate than the U.S. government, which is completely bizarre.
But these are good things, you mean?
Yeah, those are good things, whilst they last. So that's fine for us. But what it means for developing countries, both governments and corporates, that have overseas debt, it means that those rising in U.S. interest rates are pushing up the U.S. dollar and depressing their currencies, which means it's more expensive for them to then repay those foreign borrowings. And there's a lot of concern rising about that. That's one prospect. A second prospect is that there's been a ballooning of corporate debt, particularly in the United States and China. In the United States, that's been accompanied by a substantial weakening of the covenants, that the credit requirements, which people lending to companies normally require. So there is a real concern that as interest rates rise, or as the economy slows down in the U.S., that there will be more corporate debt defaults. There's a double whammy in there, in that many of those companies that have taken on more debt have done so not so much to fund increasing in their capacity or their plant or their capabilities, but to pay back shareholders by buying in some of their shares. And so they're switching the weighting in their balance sheet with more debt and less equity. But that's been fantastic for the stock market, because that's driven up share prices and dividends per share and all those other things which have investors enjoyed. But that's a real weakness. The Chinese one is more complicated, because a lot of the borrowing that's gone on there with Chinese corporates is Chinese debt. But there has been quite a fair chunk of that increased debt by them has been overseas debt as well. So that's another area. The third area is far more amorphous, which is the role of shadow banks. So these are organizations with large sums of money which they're lending to other people, and that they're not formally in the banking system, and therefore they're nowhere near as carefully regulated or as closely regulated as banks are. And shadow banks, as they're called, have almost doubled the assets they hold since the global financial crisis. And now they account for 13% of total assets in the global financial system. And they're kind of the wild cards.
And that's dangerous.
Yes, it is. So those are three things that could happen. When might that happen? Possibly over the next year or two. And how will that play out? My reading of this, from all I'm trying to absorb from people far more knowledgeable than me, is that the global economic system or financial system is a little bit better off this time around than during the GFC. First of all, banks, whilst they still lend overseas, have not been as aggressive in that. The second thing is, as far as we know, there are, amongst the sort of new and really innovative and edgy financial products that are out there, such as subprime mortgages and the bonds underlying them in the global financial crisis, which kind of found their way widely through the global financial system, and when that all fell apart, did a lot of wide damage. It's hard to spot similar deeply dodgy products out there. I'm not saying they aren't there, but the idea that there could be quite the same cascade effect or domino effect through the global financial system next time around as there was in 2007 and 8 and 9 doesn't seem to be as high a risk this time. So that gives a little bit of comfort.
Especially for New Zealand, which is quite far along in the domino effect, perhaps?
Yes, and in many ways we are better protected and prepared than we were last time in a number of respects. The first one is that indeed, like last time, our bank were not doing dodgy things like subprime mortgages. But at the start of the global financial crisis, they were still really quite heavily dependent for funds to lend here at home by raising that money overseas. But what the Reserve Bank did, and that made them very vulnerable because that was short-term borrowing for long-term lending here. And so once financial markets got really screwed up during the GFC, in fact, on a number of occasions, just completely locked up, it was impossible for our banks and indeed anybody else to renew those short-term loans they had overseas. So our Reserve Bank stepped in a number of ways. First of all, it provided them with the facility, so if they were stuck overseas, they could still get some money via the Reserve Bank. Secondly, it required the banks to fund more of their lending at home with deposits here at home. So now they are less dependent on overseas funding than they were. So if there is problems out there in the global financial system, then they are better able to weather that here. And the third one is that our banks were already better capitalized than, say, in the US going into the GFC, but now they're even better capitalized. So that's good too. So I'll add one more factor, starting with Michael Cullen as finance minister, but more crucially, Alan Bollard as governor of the Reserve Bank. Bollard pushed very hard to make sure that the major New Zealand banks, which are all owned by the Australian banks, mechanisms were put in place to make sure that the New Zealand banks could continue to function in systems terms and in capital terms, even if their Australian parents ran into trouble. All that is good. But does that mean that we would be immune from all this? No. The things that worry me most about lending in New Zealand is overall households are now at record levels of debt when you measure debt as a percentage of net income, far higher than going into the GFC. Households are getting by on that because interest rates are low. But at some point, it could be some years away, interest rates will start going up again, so it'll get hard for them. A large part of that increase in debt is because of very large mortgages, because of very expensive houses. So we've got connected problems there with people unable to service large mortgages. So if they're forced to sell, what does that do to an overpriced property market? So those are concerns. The other concern in the banking system, for me at least, and I think for some others, remains the heavy debt that a proportion of farmers, perhaps around about a third of farmers, have, and what happens to them if there is a confluence of low commodity prices and thus low payouts for their milk and rising interest rates. That's another big area to worry about.
Fuck. concern all around, but also some positives. Though it sounds like they're going to be ongoing issues, and we better understand them as best we can in order to engage with them properly, right? Tune in next time to find out more about what's going on here at home.
Crisis? What crisis?
That was Economic Anxiety with Rod Oram.